Chapter 25. Amy. I was sick to my stomach as I turned off the road and drove between the pair of stone lions guarding the entrance to Dover Equestrian. Heart pounding and gut twisting, I followed the pristine asphalt driveway through the trees and past the familiar sprawling pastures and the huge garage where the semi-truck and trailer waited to take us all to competitions I didn't even want to think about. Even with my windows closed, I couldn't avoid the sweet smell of beauty bark and cedar shavings mixed with recently rained-on evergreen trees. Someone rode a tall black warmblood in the outdoor dressage arena. Cars I may or may not have seen before were parked in the asphalt lot beside the barn. Every sunny pasture was full of blanketed grazing horses, and I couldn't remember any of their names. I tried not to look at the barn. No doubt it was exactly as I had left it, though maybe everyone was a little more lax about fixing every splinter and paint chip now that Sam was gone. I wouldn't have blamed them. For now, I didn't care to look, so I kept driving past the barn and the covered arena and a few more pastures. My throat tightened as I came around the driveway's last curve. The three-story colonial peered over the immaculately trimmed hedge and flawless landscaping. Everything had obviously been maintained in my absence, but I couldn't help shivering like I had just pulled up to a spider-webbed, broken-windowed, haunted house. I wanted to turn around and drive back to eastern Washington, back to Dustin, back to somewhere other than here, but it was too late. The front door flew open, and before the truck was even in park, my family came outside. Steeling myself, I turned off the engine and got out of the truck. My boots had just hit the cement when my mother came around to the driver's side, arms outstretched. "Oh, honey." She carefully wrapped her arms around me like she thought I'd shatter under the slightest pressure. "It's so good to see you. We've all been worried." "I know." I closed my eyes and hugged her back. "I'm sorry."
"Don't be sorry,"
she said.
"We're just glad you're home."
My entire immediate family was here, so obviously word had gotten out. My parents hugged me, and then Mariah did. My older sister's smile didn't hide her tired eyes, and I wondered just how ragged the last few weeks had run her, because I didn't already feel too guilty for words. Kurt gave me a typical big brother bear hug, but not before I caught a glimpse of just enough smug "I told you so" in his eyes to make me want to drown him in a water trough. No doubt he thought I was here because he'd persuaded me. And yes, to a degree that was true, but I had no use for gloating right now. My mom and sister herded me inside while Dad and Kurt insisted on emptying out the truck for me. My skin crawled with guilt, and also the growing irritation over being treated like an invalid. A few weeks ago, maybe, but I'd picked myself up after my emotional breakdown, and I was probably stronger now than I was before Sam died. I thought, anyway. I thought that until I was about three steps into the unchanged foyer of my own house. Standing in the place where, with a backbeat of pouring rain and my own pounding heart, two officers in wet uniforms had said the words that sent me into my weeks-long tailspin. With the August sun pouring in through the windows around the French doors, I shivered, and I couldn't stop my stomach from turning or my knees from shaking or my head from spinning. A hand materialized on my shoulder. When I turned my head, concern creased Mariah's forehead.
"You okay?"
I nodded. "Just strange to be back."
"I'm sure it is."
"And don't worry," I said quickly. "I'll be back working in the barn tomorrow, so you—"
"Relax,"
she squeezed my shoulder. "Take your time getting back into the swing of things. Dina and I have had it under control this long. We can keep it going a little longer." "Thanks," I said softly. Still, I was restless. My conscience couldn't deal with another day of letting someone else carry the weight of my business, so as soon as I was dressed the next morning, I went out to face down the facility I had left behind 2 months ago. The employees usually finished feeding and picking out stalls around 7, and the barn officially opened at 8:30. About 8 o'clock, I stood outside the flawlessly whitewashed door and tried to steel myself. The tap of my boots on the concrete echoed quietly down the immaculately swept aisle. The barn was more alive than I remembered this place ever being. The horses weren't just part of the scenery as they nickered at me through the vertical metal bars on their stalls. Every stall had a nameplate on the front, and as I connected names with faces, I remembered who was who. I even remembered some of their little personality quirks. Gamma, the temperamental thoroughbred who was terrified of striped jump poles. Melody, the Bashker Curly, who was half the size of all the other jumpers in the barn, but still tried so hard for her owner. Ehrlich, the pretentious warmblood who seemed to know his owners had paid six figures to bring him over from Germany. I remembered their quirks, but it didn't go any deeper than that. I had ridden some of these horses hundreds of times, and I felt like I was walking through a stranger's barn. Past stalls full of horses I'd never seen before. No different at all to the first time I'd set foot in Dustin's barn, even though I should have felt for these horses what I felt for his when I saw them for the last time yesterday. I paused in front of one stall, watching a blanketed gray thoroughbred eat. This would just take time, I reminded myself. It had taken time to bond with Blue and Star or to look at any of the other horses like they were anything more than farm equipment with a pulse. With some time and patience, especially without some of the old pressure hanging over my head, I'd get there with these horses too. I was in control now. I could scale back my workload if I needed to. I could make this the business I'd always wanted it to be. Perhaps not as prestigious and profitable, but I could take the weight off my sister's shoulders as well as my own and make this into what we'd wanted it to be in the first place. That was, of course, assuming I didn't go insane all over again. And prior to Sam's death, my best defense against insanity was to throw myself into my work. So despite my sister's insistence she and Dina had it under control, I made myself get back to work immediately. Day by day, though, it became clear it wouldn't keep a breakdown at bay this time. Horses were in boxes instead of grazing in the sun between trail rides. Shoes clanked on concrete instead of crunching on gravel or thudding on packed dirt. Trips to the feed store, the hardware store, the tack store were handled by other people, and when I took care of them myself, they were far shorter than I was used to. The stores were so much closer. What had taken 2 hours while I lived on the other side of the mountains took 30 minutes now, and where 2 hours wasn't a big deal before, 30 minutes felt like a colossal waste of time I couldn't afford to spare. Everyone in this facility, even the horses, it seemed, were in a huge, constant hurry. The arena had never felt so confining. Even the pastures, with their perfectly maintained white posts and boards spanning acre after acre of lush land, were claustrophobic, suffocating. The house and its huge empty rooms and long echoing halls was simultaneously too big for one person and so constricting, I was sure at any moment it would collapse in on me. More than once I caught myself walking down the aisle, looking around like I was sure I had never been here in my life, because these walls and faces weren't what they should have been. I was a stranger in my own goddamned barn. If this is where I'm supposed to be, I thought, then why do I feel like I don't belong here? But that wasn't the only reason I was slowly, steadily losing my mind all over again. Day by day, every inch of this place reminded me a little more of King's Ranch because it was the polar opposite. It didn't matter if he was dead and gone now. This place was still Sam. And that place, on the other side of the mountains at the end of a back road in the middle of nowhere, was Dustin. And every day, a particular closed door at the south end of the barn aisle, across from the office that had once been Sam's, bugged me. I was constantly aware of it, of what was behind it, but couldn't make myself go through it any more than I could make myself ignore it. Not until about 3 weeks after I came back. Every horse had been worked. Dina was training full-time now, so her mother and I made it through the work schedule by about 8 o'clock every night, though that was still by the skin of our teeth. With the last horse blanketed and put away for the night, I still had an hour to kill before I fed, and as I came out of the office after taking care of a few things, that door caught my eye for the 1,000th time. Just go in there. It's not like it's haunted. Before I could talk myself out of it, I walked across the aisle, pushed open the door, and as I stepped into the room, flicked on the light. The instant the lights came on, my hackles went up. I'd never realized just how much I'd come to hate this place. The whole facility, yes, from the massive barn to the huge cavernous house, but this room more than anywhere else. This room where the trophies gleamed and the ribbons hung. The trophies that were never big enough, the ribbons that were never blue enough, long enough, prestigious enough. This room that smelled like silver polish and made me think of the nauseating sourness of celebratory champagne on my tongue. There had been a time in my life when a tiny fourth-place ribbon on my wall could bring a smile to my face. Now there were tricolor championship sashes, gleaming trophies and embroidered blankets, collars made of silk roses, and for the life of me, I couldn't even remember which horse I'd been on when I'd won them. I couldn't remember which were mine and which were Mariah's. I didn't care enough to try to remember either. I just didn't give a shit. I'd stopped giving a shit a long time and probably 3 or 4 dozen trophies ago.
Reminiscing?
The smile in Mariah's voice made me extra glad I had my back to her so she couldn't see me grimace. Something like that, I said without turning around. Her boots tapped dully on the hard floor as she walked into the room.
You okay?
Just thinking, I guess. I let my gaze drift from ribbon to trophy to ribbon. About all this.
Something wrong?
Everything is wrong. Every fucking thing. I went to one of the leather chairs in front of the television where Sam had always enjoyed showing potential clients DVDs of various victories. I sank into the chair, rested my elbows on my knees, and let my head fall into my hands. The other chair creaked softly.
Amy, what's wrong?
Without looking up, I whispered, How did we turn into this?
Turn into what?
Sitting up, I gestured at the room around us.
This.
Mariah cocked her head, letting her dark bangs almost fall across her eyes.
You mean a successful, well-respected breeding and training operation?
Yeah. My shoulders slumped as I looked at all the hallmarks of what a success our business had become. Yeah, that.
I'm not following you, she said. If I didn't know any better, I'd think you were unhappy with the fact that we're living the dream we had when we were kids.
I met her eyes. Is this really the dream we had?
What do you mean?
She furrowed her brow.
We both knew it would be a lot of work, long hours.
No, it's not that. I sighed. It's not the work. It's... How do I put it into words? After a moment, I pushed myself up and walked toward one of the ribbon and photo-covered walls. I pulled down a plaque from a few years ago, one commemorating a regional show-jumping title I'd won. The bottom half had the title and the name of the competition engraved on a brass plate. The upper half was a photo of me on the back of a bay horse as we sailed over an Oxer. I turned the trophy so Mariah could see it. Do you remember this?
Of course I do, she said. That was an amazing show. Why?
I looked at it again, running my fingers over the photo. The horse's name was Benny. His left-to-right lead changes were a little rough, and he... I turned to Mariah. That's literally all I can remember about him.
It was a long time ago, Mariah said.
Tracing the edge of the brass plate with my thumb, I said, Do you remember Blackjack?
Of course I do, she said. How could I forget him?
I smiled at the memories. You remember how he used to try to eat his lead rope if you didn't keep an eye on him? Mariah laughed.
And how we had to put duct tape on all the cross ties because he kept trying to eat those too?
In spite of myself, I laughed softly.
and how he wasn't afraid of anything, but once in a while he'd decide he was terrified of a camera flash. Oh, God, yes, she groaned and rolled her eyes. I laughed again, but my humor quickly evaporated. Mariah rose.
What's wrong, sweetheart?
It's been almost 15 years since we lost Black Jack. I held up the plaque in my hand. This was 3 years ago, and all I can remember about Benny is that his lead changes were a little rough. She put her hand on my arm.
But Black Jack was our horse, just like Sonny and Petty Cash.
I know. I hung the plaque back on its nail. I feel so detached from what we're doing, from all the horses. Gesturing at the awards, I added, we could have won all these on tractors or motorcycles for all the connection I had with the horses. She squeezed my arm.
So it became more of a business than a passion.
It became all business and no passion. I stared at the plaque I had just put back on the wall. I missed the three-stall barn behind the three-bedroom house. You know, back when it was about the horses and not the trophies or the money or the glory. I swallowed hard, trying to keep my emotions in check. Back when competing was fun. This was never what I wanted. Mariah sighed heavily.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I could have sworn there was a time when we enjoyed it.
There was. I swallowed hard. And I'm sorry I left this all on you while I was gone.
Don't worry about it, she said. I had it all under control, and you had things to deal with I don't even want to imagine.
I chewed my lip. Then, barely whispering, asked, You know why I left? She rested her hand between my shoulder blades.
Why?
It wasn't just because I couldn't deal with Sam's death, I said. Looking back now, I probably would have taken off sooner or later, even if he hadn't died.
So why did you go?
I met her eyes. Because I needed to find my love of horses again.
And did you find it?
She asked. I found so much more than that.
Then why are you so unhappy?
My eyes welled up as I met hers. Because I left it all there. Her lips parted. I lowered my gaze just as my vision blurred again and she wrapped her arms around me. She stroked my hair for a long moment.
This is about Dustin, isn't it?
Yeah, I sighed, rubbing my eyes with the heels of my hands. It's about him, the horses, everything.
So what are you going to do?
She asked.
I'm not sure yet.
I looked around the trophy room at all the awards and photos. I don't want to leave the whole place in your lap, but I'm not sure if I can keep doing this.
Maybe it's time to close the book on this part of your life.
What about you? I turned to her again. We're in this together.
We are, she said with a nod. But that doesn't have to be forever. I don't want you to be chained to it if it's making you this miserable, and I'm not going to run it on my own if you decide you want out.
Her shoulders slumped a little, and for the first time I realized how tired her brown eyes looked.
In fact, I've been giving some serious thought to doing something else myself.
Really?
Yeah,
she sighed.
I still want to work with horses, but...
Her gaze drifted around the room, and I swore I could see exhaustion darkening the shadows on her face and the circles beneath her eyes.
I think you're right about the way we've done things with the business.
Turning to me again, she said,
And I'm burned out, too.
Probably doesn't help you've had to do it all recently.
No,
she said quietly.
But I think the writing's been on the wall for a while. Maybe the last couple of months were what we both needed.
She put her arm around my shoulders.
So whatever you want to do, if you don't want to keep this going, I won't fight you on it.
I didn't realize it was taking that much of a toll on you too, I whispered.
Neither did I.
What would you do, I asked, in my shoes, Mariah shook her head. I don't know, sweetie. I can't really imagine being in your shoes, so I just don't know. But you've spent your entire adult life adjusting your dream to fit someone else's until you finally crashed and burned. Whatever decision you make, it should be what you want, not anyone else, including me. I nodded but said nothing. Mariah hugged me again. I need to get home. Take it easy tonight, okay? I will. I listened until her footsteps disappeared down the aisle, and then I dropped into one of the chairs again and looked around the trophy room. It amazed me, right then, how a solution could be so damned simple and yet so, so difficult to implement. I knew what I wanted to do, what I needed to do, but making it happen seemed about as daunting as trying to get on blue in the round pen for the first time, and with just as much potential to leave me on my ass. But what else could I do?